I just think we should completely avoid the whole topic of the crying CEO.
I mean, it's quite a difficult thing to do, to stay away from the crying CEO, but I guess we can try.
You're listening to the Host Unknown podcast.
Hello, hello, hello. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening from wherever you are joining us. And welcome to episode 116-ish of the Host Unknown podcast. Dry your eyes, dear listener. we're sure you've had a tough week. We're sure that letting go of those people was probably the most difficult thing you could say or do this week. And it's probably put you in a very vulnerable position. But Friday is here. The Host Unknown podcast is here. And Javad is here. How are you, Jav?
Oh, I'm very good. I'm very good. I have next week off, which is great. I'm not going anywhere, which is even better. So I'm not spending any money. You know, I did sit down and like shed a few tears in front of my kids. You know, this is very difficult. I can't take you on an overpriced holiday this year. So they were comforting me by the end of it. But some more excitement in my neighbourhood.
Ooh!
A few days ago, one of my neighbours who's two houses down on the left, so there's my immediate neighbour, there's the service alleyway, and then they live on the other side. Now, they're builders, and they've got a couple of vans, and one of them got nicked overnight.
No. Yeah, well, surely no tools were left in the van overnight.
Well, unfortunately, he had several tools in the van. But the van itself was his major tool, because you know he's lugging around stuff and what have you. So he came to me, he was really distraught. He was like, I see you've got some cameras up, can you catch anything there? And I was like, mate, GDPR and all this stuff, I can only cover my own driveway, you know, I'm not covering. Yeah, I can't cover the road and the alleyway and your house. And he goes like, brother, I give you permission if you want to face the camera this way. So
you went through the satellite footage that you had for the
So I'm in the process of upgrading my camera system. Going to add four more cameras.
What?
Yes.
Is this all a wired system or an IP system?
This is all a wired system.
Okay.
So the guy comes and he'll install it for me. I'm not installing it myself yet, because as soon as it's wires and stuff and electricity, I don't know how to do it.
That's outsourcing.
You can't do the buttons.
Outsourcing, yeah. Written all over it.
Exactly. Who do you think I am? Like a sock analyst or something? I don't do anything myself.
You're going to outsource it to some East End barrow boy done good.
Yeah. No, there's a really good guy not too far from here. He's got a shop that he's the one that got my current setup going, and it's really good. He also like every time he comes around to look at the cameras or fit them or whatever, he goes, hey, I can also get you one of those chipped like sky boxes, if you're like, you know, those dream boxes that give you every year. I said, no. Oh, you know, these neighbors, they've all got it. You can ask them. It runs. I said, no, I don't want them. Thank you very much.
It gets you all the blueies and everything.
Yeah, I know.
Basically neighborhood watch control center.
I am. I'm just picturing like where in my office I can set up a whole bank of monitors and like, you know, I'm going to set up like walkie talkies with the neighbors and everything. It's going to be like, you know.
What's your call sign going to be?
Yeah.
Eagle eye.
There we go. Oh, and then the old neighbour, Bob, the builder.
Yeah.
Oh, fantastic! Do you know what the ongoing saga of your back passage must have every listener hanging on every word and every episode. So you know, if nothing else, it gets everybody back to listening to next week's episode.
I know. So stay tuned, folks.
Indeed. Stay tuned for the further sagas of Jav's back passage. Andy, how are you?
Good. I'm literally, as Jav was talking, I was just scrolling through my neighbourhood watch WhatsApp group,
because there's actually a white van that was going around our area. And someone said, hey, keep an eye out for these scumbags. And he's posted, screenshots from his CCTV. I chased them off when they were trying to steal materials from my house. And basically, it's a white van that's been stolen. So it's a legit van from a building company.
Oh, it's not like a Mr. Whippy then?
No, but it's a building company van. So, you know, quite likely to be in the area and stuff. But yeah, the van was stolen. They've put some false plates on it as well.
And, now, you know, far be it from me to be the detective of the group, but Jav's neighbour has just had a building van stolen. You have just had a building works van, a stolen building works van, driving around nicking stuff. I reckon you two should be talking.
So the only missing piece here, last Wednesday and Thursday night, where were you, Tom?
I'm going to plead the fifth on that.
So how was your week anyway, Tom, other than a productive trip to Lidl?
Indeed. It's always a productive trip to Lidl. The stuff you can find there is surprising. Surprising. I have to say, I have a cupboard full of it now.
I mean, it's almost a cliche, but everyone does it, right?
Whenever I need a trombone, a TIG welder and a wetsuit, where else would you go?
Exactly.
Do you know what? I was walking through there the other day and they had some, you know, when you do welding, you have to wear a helmet, you know, that dulls the blanks out the vision so you don't go blind. And they had some automatic welding helmets. So basically you can see through them and then as soon as it detects light, boom, it changes and, you know, it goes dark, etc. They looked so cool.
Are you going to convert it into like a Star Wars thing?
I was so close to buying one.
So when a lightsaber lights up, the mask automatically drops down, sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly. So I then have to use the Force. Exactly.
Yeah.
I was so close to buying one. I was like, for goodness sake. It had a paint job down the side, red and yellow flames and stuff. It looked really cool. But aside from that, been in the office, making the most of their air conditioning, obviously, just like everybody else. So, I'm picking up on a project and completing another. So I had the glass delivered for my TV mirror in the bedroom. So that's being fitted this weekend. And gonna kick off and do another magic mirror as well. So yeah, busy. It's gonna be a busy weekend.
Damn. So I'm hearing a lot of stuff that you're doing yourself, and I'm hearing a lot of stuff that Jav's outsourcing.
Yes.
How the turns have tabled.
Exactly. And yet you're the CISO.
Oh, and that's right. And there's some fella in North London I got to install some cameras for as well. Pain in the ass. He keeps trying to sell me dodgy software.
try and upsell.
Yeah, Office 95. He said it's the latest version. Anyway, shall we see what we've got coming up for you today? This Week in InfoSec talks about repressive government's weapon of choice long before Pegasus. Rant of the Week is another big tech chatbot in the wild. Billy Big Balls demonstrates why defence in depth really can save you some pain. Industry News brings us the latest and greatest security news stories from around the world as usual. And Tweet of the Week is an InfoSec dad joke, my favourite kind. So let's move on to our favourite part of the show, the part of the show that we like to call
This Week in InfoSec.
It is that part of the show which for more than 9 months in the year takes a stroll down InfoSec memory lane with content liberated from the Today in InfoSec Twitter account and further afield. So a quick first story takes us back this week 34 years in 1988 when Dade Murphy, aka Zero Cool, crashed 1,507 computers, causing a 7-point drop in the New York Stock Exchange. He was 11 years old at the time and his family was fined $45,000. He was then banned from touching a computer until he turned 18. And that story made the front page of the New York Times on 10th of August, 1988.
It's true. I saw it. I saw it. I was there.
Yeah.
I definitely saw it.
Yeah. So we won't dwell too much on that because everyone knows all about Dade Murphy, a.k.a. Zero Core.
Well, everyone except my mum, in fairness.
Okay. Well, we'll stick a link in the show notes. I think there's a screen, screenshot we can put into. So our second story takes us back 8 years to the 6th of August, 2014. And it may sound familiar because a hacker announced the theft of 40 gigabytes of data from the maker of Finn Fisher spyware. The hacker then leaked the price list, client list, and more. So NSO Group's Pegasus was not the first spyware vendor to be used by oppressive governments to spy on anyone they wanted. And this week in 2014, an Anglo-German company, Gamma International UK Limited, the maker of the secretive Finn Fisher spyware, which sold exclusively to governments and police agencies, was hacked. So during the hack, it revealed its clients, prices, and its effectiveness across an unbelievable span of applications, operating systems, and more. And this parody sort of Twitter account by the hacker claiming credit for the leak was set up in tandem with the data being released. And it really sort of spilled the tea on what many people already suspected about these sort of dodgy selling practices that were going on. So in 2012, the Finn Fisher software was found sort of being widely used by governments in the Middle East, particularly Bahrain, to hack and spy on computers and phones of journalists and dissidents. And Gamma Group, the company that makes Finn Fisher, denied having anything to do with it, saying that, they only sell their hacking tools to good governments. Those authoritarian regimes must have stolen a copy. But unfortunately, those files stolen from Gamma's networks provided hard proof that they knew exactly, what they were selling, who they were selling, even during the accusations at the time in 2012. And they knew that the software was being used to attack Bahraini activists. That stolen data contained client list, price list, source code, details about the effectiveness of the Finn Fisher malware, user support documentation, tutorials, and more.
And an invoice to the Bahraini government as well, presumably.
Exactly. And one of the spreadsheets actually had a list like how Finn Fisher performed against the 35 top antivirus products, literally showing how easy it was to defeat, detection.
Jesus.
But yeah, the documents did reveal some like good usage statistics by country. I mean, imagine, like other customers include, which sort of prompted the parody Twitter account to tweet, "We have some integrity. We do not sell to Israel." So I'm sure this is probably the origin story of Pegasus anyway, right?
Yeah, they're like, we'll make our own.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to question the morals of any company that would just, when faced with simple facts, just deny everything and say, no, it's not true, when you know that that's going to come out at some point in the future.
They stole the copy, and then they planted a fake invoice on our systems as well. And then they made a bank transfer to make it look like we sold it to them.
Yeah.
It's so good they used it on us and we didn't detect it.
Yeah.
But prior to the leak, in 2013, like human rights advocates and virus hunters, basically they scrutinized this Finn Fisher software to like uncover potential abuses because they first got a glimpse of it when the Egyptian state security uncovered, during that revolution, that this software was actually being used. And up until that point in 2011, people had never seen, like researchers had only ever suspected it, to the point where even friend of the show, Mikko Hipponen, the chief research officer at Helsinki-based F-Secure, actually told Bloomberg that we know it exists, but we've never seen it. So wow. You think of it like a rare diamond. It's quite the rarity. And the story obviously was repeated again with Pegasus. You just need to rotate the names of spyware and the names of governments caught using it. And the story is good
to go. And the names of companies denying that they had anything to do with it.
Actually, and it all just gets brushed under the carpet.
Yeah, there's something interesting, though. Just a few days ago, and I had a quick scan through, and I don't think we cover it later on the show, but there's a former Twitter employee who worked from 2013 to 2015 who's been convicted for spying for Saudi Arabia. So Ahmed Abu Amu was charged with sending Saudi officials private information of users who were critical of the kingdom in exchange for hundreds of thousands of dollars. So when you talk about insider threats and when you talk about, like, you don't really need Pegasus, you just need to pay someone who's working for one of the companies to give you all the information. I think it just... And then the second point is, you mentioned Miko, and I've just got to give a cheap plug. Miko's new book, If It's Smart, It's Vulnerable, is out. Widely publishing. I've started reading it. It is a very good read so far.
It's not on Amazon, though, is it?
Oh, no, I got sent a pre-copy, I think.
Oh, God, everybody I know has got been sent a pre-read. Miko, I know you're listening. I know you're a fan of the show. Do a man a favour. Send me a couple of copies. I'll give one to Andy and everything.
I'll be honest. I'll wait until it comes out on Blinkist so I can listen to it in sort of 15 minutes. I always set it to like 1.25 speed.
Yeah.
So anyway, right, our final story is from a mere 7 years ago, when on the 11th of August 2015, a day after Oracle's CSO Mary Ann Davidson posted a blog titled "No, You Really Can't," the blowback from the security community caused Oracle to remove the post. So what was so controversial about this, I hear you ask? Well, Oracle's chief security officer, Mary Ann Davidson, would like to get rid of all the reverse engineering security weenies, as she put it. And she wanted you to know that static analysis is Oracle's job, not yours, and that looking for security vulnerabilities in this way breaks the license agreement that you signed up to. So obviously, at which point the internet exploded. The blog post in which she gave Oracle's position on this point got, you know, sort of called various things: arrogant, holier than thou, petty, condescending, idiotic, childish, scolding,
patronizing,
whining. And it was basically, within 24 hours, it's deleted. And with the benefit of obviously unemotional hindsight and, you know, the pitchfork mob mentality of the angry Twitter herd, there were actually some interesting points made in her blog post, but it was unfortunately buried inside paragraphs of, as you say, sort of, you know, condescending vitriol, really. So she, like, literally quoting, you know, from the blog, she goes on to say, "Recently, I have seen a largest uptick in customers reverse engineering our code to attempt to find security vulnerabilities in it. Insert big sigh here. This is why I've been writing a lot of letters to customers that start with hi, how's it, aloha, but end with please comply with your license agreement and stop reverse engineering our code already." it's quite a tough one. You know, she goes on to say that, look, you know, we're really good at you know, scanning for vulnerabilities. Like, you know, we write half of these software, you know, these analysis tools ourselves. So, you know, we actually understand what's happening. So all these tools you use have a close to 100% false positive rate. So, you know, stop wasting our time by reporting them. You know, we're just trying to save time in this mutually time wasting exercise. But the problem is, because she goes on such a rant, and it's a rant that you'd have been proud of, Tom. She literally, I mean, the link's in the show notes, because the Wayback Machine doesn't forget, right? So, you know, she actually starts going off track on some of these other frustrations she's facing. She does this Q&A, and it says, like, question, hey, I've got an idea. Why not do a bug bounty? Pay third parties to find this stuff. Answer, bigger sigh. Bounties are the new boy band. Many companies are screaming, fainting, and throwing their underwear at security researchers to find problems in their code and insisting this is the way, walk in it. If you're not doing bug bounties, your code isn't secure. Ah, well, we find 87% of security vulnerabilities ourselves. Security researchers find about 3%, and the rest are found by customers. And it's, you know, that whole sort of, I don't know, there's just a lot of arrogance about this, you know. It was just the way it was written, it didn't come across well. And I do sort of remember in 2015 this kind of kicking off on Twitter, but, you know, I was drinking a lot at the time, so
I don't think I got involved in
I know the feeling. I remember it well. Actually, no, I don't.
But yeah, I think that, you know, there's a way of getting your point across, but sort of hiding behind the, you know, any of this reverse engineering you're trying to do is a violation of your license agreement. Stop trying to tell us about vulnerabilities. It's there. I think universally recognises the wrong way about doing it.
I mean, I think the point of trying to stop people from just, you know, basically script kiddies just from running tools against the product and saying, oh, we found something, when those tools are freely available and are used by Oracle, it just wastes everybody's time. There's a way of saying that that doesn't involve putting things in brackets like even bigger sigh and all that sort of crap. I mean, and that, this is the problem with a lot of these stuff. And I think Oracle as well suffers, probably because of Larry Ellison more than anything, but suffers from an arrogance anyway, you know, as a corporate culture. And I think if you don't message things correctly, if you don't think about your audience and who you're talking to and what you want them to take away from it, it's just going to get, you know, drowned out in all the in all the noise and tears and vulnerable LinkedIn posts.
Yeah, but I guess this is a good reminder, you know, not to write with such emotion without sitting on it for a while. And also why, you know, big companies have such rigorous controlled media channels.
Yeah, well, especially as it was removed and said something like this post did not reflect our corporate values or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, that's normally something that we, you know, that you say when somebody goes on some kind of Nazi-based, you know, profanity-laden a rant rather than just talking about weenies. excellent, Andy. Thank you for that lovely trip down memory lane in
this week in InfoCert.
If you work hard, research stories with diligence, and deliver well-edited, award-winning, studio-quality content for high-paying sponsors, then you too can be usurped by three idiots who know how to think on their feet. You're listening to the award-winning Host Unknown podcast.
Ratch and Tom, If It's Smart, It's Vulnerable is now available on Amazon. So you can go on there and get yourself a hard copy or the Kindle version.
Oh, fantastic. I will do that straight after the show.
As long as you can get a voucher or a coupon.
Yeah, Mikko, if you're listening, text us a voucher, mate. Okay, on to my favourite part of the show, the part of the show that I like to call
Listen Up!
Rant of the Week.
It's time to mother rage!
So this might sound a little bit wrong at first that I'm ranting about this, given the subject. So Meta, i.e. Facebook, have released a chatbot, and people can chat to this chatbot, clues in the name, on Facebook and ask it questions on nearly any topic, and we'll get a sensible answer back. The thing is, though, this prototype chatbot has told the BBC journalist that Mark Zuckerberg exploits its users for money, which I think is hilarious.
So it's an honest chatbot.
It's an honest chatbot. Well, also, the chatbot uses artificial intelligence, and effectively it has access to everything on the internet, so it can, you know, make up its own mind. So when presented with, you know, all of humankind's universal knowledge, it came to the conclusion that Mark Zuckerberg exploits its users for money, that our country, i.e. the US, is divided, and he didn't help at all. So these are fairly interesting claims from something that has the sum of all humankind's knowledge. You'd think Meta and Zuckerberg might be in a little bit of a spin about this. And I know there's a lot of people out there who are, you know, probably sort of punching the air and saying, you know, yes, here's one in the eye for you, Zuckerberg. You human-skinned lizard, reptile person, you. But what people forget, and I used the phrase slightly earlier, is that there's no such thing as bad publicity, in the sense that Zuckerberg knows exactly what's going on here, because what Facebook, and let's call it by its original name, because Meta's ridiculous. What Facebook does is gather as much data about everybody that it possibly can. And the use of this chatbot is doing just that. It is gathering vast amounts of data from what people are asking it, what it's no doubt siphoning off huge amounts of data from people's computers while it's doing it. It wouldn't surprise me in the slightest, shouldn't surprise anybody there. And it's doing exactly what Zuckerberg says. And the fact that it's getting this kind of coverage makes me think that we shouldn't have covered it at all, because we know that our many, many dozens of listeners will have such an influence on this. But the fact is, the coverage it's getting is getting more people to use it, and therefore Facebook is getting more access to more data for it to use, process, and sell. So Blender,
so his plan's working, is what you're saying.
His evil genius plan is working. And the fact that, you know, BlenderBot 3, which I don't know, was perhaps they misspelt Brenda, I don't know, but it was released on Friday, so just a week ago, and it's already garnered international coverage, which is very, very concerning. So yeah. If you're sort of listening to this, or if you're reading about this and you're thinking, ha, you know, Zuckerberg's been sort of hung by his own petard, unfortunately, I think you're wrong. And unfortunately, you know, if you've interacted with Brenda, then chances are she knows a whole lot more about you than you probably know about yourself now.
Wow. Your microphone was on, your camera was on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. We saw what you were doing with that industrial power tool.
I love how, and folks, listeners, I have to apologize for Tom. He's a bit old. But Facebook, one of the most popular used services internationally, releases a new service, and Tom is surprised it's garnered coverage internationally.
But it's gone what?
That, you know, it's got so viral, like everyone's like talking about it around the world. I mean, it's not like Facebook is a small product that no one uses. And I mean, like, just think about it. Apple releases a new phone and it's just got like, you know, 0.2 millimeters shaved off the corner and one extra pixel on its camera, and that gets international coverage all the time. So I think that's just part and parcel of these large companies. Whenever they release anything, there's always going to be coverage. What I did hear, though, was that if this hadn't have garnered them the coverage they wanted, Zuckerberg did have a crying picture on hand. He was about to release it to say about how bad he felt. About
how vulnerable he felt.
Yes.
Yeah, the one thing, with your analogy there about Apple, Jav, the one thing I would say is that the latest iPhone doesn't call Tim Cook a knob.
No, because they've got Siri and the manners.
Yeah, there's no way that Zuckerberg could show emotion at all. He hasn't learned that.
No. I mean, he would send a command to his central processing unit to release some saline-based liquid to exit from his one of his eye socket holes.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. No, but I think, like, you know, you say all this, and, you know, you're not wrong in that, you know, Facebook has been known for collecting data, but how's that different from Alexa or Siri or Google? Like, you know, it's they're all always listening, they're all collecting information. That's how
they're all wired.
Recommendations on what to buy and what to do, and hey, it looks like you're heading towards, you know, this shop again, or like, Andy, you're running low on Haribos, would you like me to order some more for you? You know, it's that's the name of the game.
Sugar-free Haribo replacements, thank you very much.
They're called Jealous Sweets.
Is it really? Is that the name?
Yeah.
It's your favourite kind, isn't it, Jav?
Yeah.
So you're absolutely right. You know, all this is about gathering data, and many, many other companies gather data. And we talk about those companies and we rant about them without a shadow of a doubt. I think the interesting angle here is that people think that it's backfired when actually it's doing exactly exactly what Zuckerberg wanted it to do.
You're right. Yeah. You're right. So there was, I was reading some tweet by a popular YouTuber, tech YouTuber, and they said that whenever they release and they said that because I don't like giving other YouTubers any props because I don't want people going to anyone else. And they said that when they make a video, they deliberately get a small fact wrong. So they'll call, you know, something, you know, by the wrong name, or they'll call the AC current, the DC current, when whatever. And he goes, the reason for that is that people love to jump into the comment section and just correct him. You're such an idiot. How could you make this mistake? Clearly that's the red wire and you called it the blue wire and, you know, whatever. Because it's normally a small insignificant, but that's what boosts the engagement and that's what the algorithm likes and that's what bumps it all the way to the top. And that's how I get, like, you know, hundreds of thousands of views per video. And this is exact same strategy here, isn't it? This is it. Like, let's get the chatbot to say something mean about Zuckerberg and the whole world will, you know, love it.
I'm quite impressed that you've taken it to such levels that the entire contents of all your YouTube videos are entirely wrong, Jav.
No, I know. I'm just like, I've gone extreme. I'm like that. Let's just, I mean, you know, if it works for Alex Jones, I mean.
Yeah, that's very true. Very true. On which note, we shall say.
Rant of the week. You're listening to the award-winning Host Unknown podcast, the show which smashing security sets their out-of-office to.
Okay, Jav, over to you now. I think you've got a couple of Billy Big Balls. You have an entire sack full, let's say, of Billy Big Balls for us.
Yes, I do have an entire sackful today for you, dear listeners, so prepare yourselves. Twilio discloses a data breach. And so Twilio, the big internet company, they got breached after an SMS phishing attack on employees, or as we like to say, a smishing attack on employees. So they were sent text messages to their phone, which they impersonated Twilio's IT department, asking them to click URLs containing the words Twilio, Okta, and SSO. So it all looked classic. Very legitimate. And that's the problem with phones. It's like, you know, you just see the words. It's really hard to inspect where the URL is actually taking you, or, you know, people can't be bothered. And also the phone, you're checking them at all odd hours of the day and night, even when you're bleary-eyed first thing in the morning. What? Oh, IT needs me to change it. Okay, let me click on this. So they clicked through and it took them to, surprise, surprise, a landing page created by the baddies. And they then entered in their ID and password, after which they were... what's the term? 2FA spammed or what have you? So basically the criminals started to log in with those credentials. And every time they logged in, the employee would get pushed a 2FA code. Not a 2FA code, like one of those approvals. And they kept doing it. And they started phoning them up saying, hello, we're calling from the IT department and you've got a push notification. Please click yes, because that is all part of the security of your account. So eventually they wore them down and one of them clicked, or a couple of them clicked yes on those MFA notifications and gave the criminals access to their accounts. And this made me laugh.
A successful attack.
It made
why,
me laugh.
Why did somebody's misfortune make you laugh, Jack?
I see what you're doing there. It made me laugh because I was sort of like hung my head a bit when at RSA a few months ago, no less than 3 keynote speakers trotted out the erroneous stat that MFA protects against 99% of all attacks, which is And actually, if you look into that stat, it's not even the accurate attribution. I think it's originally a Microsoft quote, but it was account takeover. So it protects against 99% of account takeover. So it's used really erroneously and out of context in many things. And then I was like, haha, where's your MFA now? So the question is then like, well, I'm not hating on MFA. I think it's, as a technical control, it's one of the best controls out there that gives you the most.
It's fundamental, and it addresses a huge amount.
It gives you the, it's real return on investment for it.
Yeah.
But you need to be realistic about the limitations of what it is and how you implement it. And especially you need to look at whether what you have implemented is phishing resistant. Because if you can still like bombard people with all these notifications, and we've heard stories in the past of like people just saying, yeah, I just say yes to everything because that's what I've been told to do. You know, you desensitize them to it. So how can you do it correctly? And for that, we turn to Cloudflare. Cloudflare said someone tried to pull the Twilio phishing tactic on us too. So what happened is that their employees also received text messages claiming to be from the company's IT department, and they fooled them into logging onto a fake web page designed to look like Twilio's own sign-in page. And surprisingly, these domains were registered literally within the hour prior to those text messages going out. So it was a well thought out and coordinated campaign. But they failed because they used those hardware keys like a YubiKey or something like that, that you have to pop into your machine. And that's your second factor. It doesn't text you a code. It doesn't have a pop-up notification. So there was nothing that they could give to the criminals to get them to log on. So a good example of a phishing resistant form of MFA.
So security over convenience.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, that's right. And
Well, security and convenience.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Unless it's not convenient to carry a hardware key around, honestly. No. But like, there's like, we all know the push to authenticate is far easier.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. I leave mine in my laptop. I'm just saying.
Snap it off.
Yeah.
Plug it in. Snap it off.
Yeah. Fuck it. As long as there's a bit you can press, we're all right.
Permanently in there. Yeah.
Exactly. So wasn't Twilio something else beforehand? Didn't they rename themselves?
I
don't remember.
I thought weren't they a malware company? Is it just not? Is it McAfee? No. Were they McAfee?
No.
No.
Founded in 2008.
Okay, I'm thinking of something else. What did McAfee rebrand as?
Oh, I don't know. They split into two different companies, and maybe then one of them split into two different companies. It's McAfee's all over the place.
Yeah.
Trellix. You're thinking of Trellix.
Trellix, that's who I'm thinking of. Began with T, stupid name, means nothing.
Yeah. Trellix. Aren't they that like dance group or something?
You're thinking of Trello, the mood board company.
No, I'm thinking of Skrillex. That's who I'm thinking of.
Oh. You mean the people who wrote our intro tune without realising it? Oh, dear. And on which copyright note we will end on. And thank you, Jav, for this week's...
Billy Big Balls of the Week.
We are officially the most entertaining content amongst our peers.
That's an old one.
That's all right, let's do something else then. Let's do...
Attention. This is a message for our friends over at Smashing Security.
Busted.
We caught you listening again. This is the Host Unknown podcast.
Okay, with time rapidly running out, it is time. And what time is it, Andy?
It is that time of the show where we head over to our news sources over at the InfoSec PA Newswire, who have been very busy bringing us the latest and greatest security news from around the globe.
Industry news.
Meta takes action against cyber espionage operations targeting Facebook in South Asia.
Industry news.
Number of firms unable to access cyber insurance set to double.
Industry news.
Smishing attack led to major Twilio breach.
Industry news.
Health advisor fined after illegally accessing medical records.
Industry news.
US Treasury sanctions virtual currency mixer for connections with Lazarus Group.
Industry news.
Predator pleads guilty after targeting thousands of girls online.
Industry news.
Cybercriminals shift from macros to shortcut files to hack business PCs, HP reports.
Industry news.
Deathstalker's vile rat continues to target foreign and crypto exchanges.
Industry news.
Suspected $3 million romance scammer extradited to Japan.
Industry news.
And that was this week's
industry news.
Huge if true.
Huge if true.
Huge.
So this predator that pled guilty after targeting thousands of girls online, why didn't he just enable his self-destruct bomb on his wrist?
You know, there's a prequel to that out, I think, on Disney.
Yeah, Prey.
Prey.
Supposed to be
that.
Really, really good.
I don't know.
I thought you were going to go the other way there. Yeah.
No, it's supposed
you
to
know
be
what?
Excellent.
I've the original with Arnie was such a good film. It's among the top films ever made in history. And everything else after that has been such a terrible disappointment. It just hasn't been able to capture, especially those Alien versus Predator movies. And so I really don't know whether I can take another one, another such disappointment by watching Prey.
I keep hearing that it's very, very good.
Who said this? Oh, these
I did just then, didn't you hear me?
Yeah, okay. I've heard it's very good. Okay, cool.
I think we should also, we deliberately avoid any sort of Black Hat DEF CON stories because we can't be asked for that.
It's not happening.
Exactly.
It's like when babies close their eyes and they think that nobody can see them. Yeah, if we don't talk about it, it's not going. It's not happening.
And also the NHS hack with 111 going offline and the Cisco hack as well. There's so many great stories we've not referenced this week.
What was the Cisco hack?
This was also similar to the Twilio one, wasn't it? It was like their MFA got...
And they actually posted a really good write-up of what happened and went public with it. But wow. I think it's because the gang that sort of hacked them said that they were going to release everything anyway. So Cisco got ahead of it. I don't think they were...
Including
sort of
the invoice to Bahrain.
But 2.8 gigs allegedly stolen from that one. A ransomware group tried to extort them.
Do you know what? Nowadays, 2.8 gigs doesn't sound like a lot, does it? It really doesn't.
No, but then I don't know if you think about emails without attachments.
Yeah, I know, but 100 gig, that's get quite large, right? A terabyte, that's a lot. Like 2.8 gigs, I mean, that's like, you could fit that on... You know, the smallest of USB sticks you can get now.
Yeah, but do you know how they... I'll tell you what, you know, we should have actually covered it, because what was interesting was the way they actually did it was they hacked an employee's personal Google account.
Yeah.
And that employee's personal Google account was synced, obviously, with the browser they used at work. And obviously all their credentials are stored in the browser as well.
Oh!
So then all they had to do was get the employee to accept the MFA push that went through to him, which he did. And I see it's actually, they're calling it MFA fatigue attack.
Yeah.
So send a constant stream of MFA requests
you know, to annoy them in the hopes that I finally accept one to stop them being generated. And yeah, finally convinced them to do it, and the attacker's got access to the VPN and then spread laterally through Citrix servers and domain controllers.
Wow.
Yeah, it seemed like a very hastily put together. I mean, there's been lots of questions that people have been asking on Twitter about it. One of these, like, 2FA fatigue is one of the fakest things I've ever heard of. Why are proper security professionals treating this as though it's not just a weak excuse? And then they further up. Yes, I wanted the car alarm to go off when a break-in was attempted, but I heard it 9 times at OBS when I went outside and handed him my keys. I seriously doubt this technically still a theft.
It's true. It's all about marketing, though, right? This is clearly a comms that has gone through the marketing channels.
Yes.
And, you know, that those highly paid people are doing what they do best.
Yeah.
If you put a recognizable tag on something, if you name it something that sort of kind of makes sense, then people will become more aware of it.
Yeah.
If you were to call it sending you 2FA requests until you finally accept yes, it's not really quite so snappy, is
it? Not as catchy. Yeah.
No. Anything else in here? I'm glad to see that the Host Unknown cyber espionage operations that have targeted Facebook in South Asia are going well.
Yep. Although I think we're going to have to pull back. They're onto us.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, we had to have that conversation with Brenda, unfortunately. So
yeah.
It's all very dull, really, at the moment.
Yeah. Everyone's in Vegas.
Shifting from macros to shortcut files. Okay.
The romance scammer story is quite interesting because Interpol arrested 15 suspects in connection with the romance scam conspiracy. And most of these were unwitting money mules. So they were just told, hey, make money from home and we'll transfer money and keep 10% and forward the rest onto us. And so they like, you know, whatever. The group is thought to have made $3 million from it. And it's quite dull. So,
well, I think we talked about that Netflix show. I can't remember what it's called now, about the romance scammer who, it was in a couple of three parts, I think. And you're getting halfway through it and you're thinking, how is he able to afford all of this lifestyle to show off? And of course, what it's showing is that he's using one person to fund the next person to fund the next person and so on. And it's absolutely fascinating how they work and how utterly convincing they are.
Yeah, never watched
the Tinder Swindler.
Tinder Swindler, there we go. Yeah, that was the one. It's worth watching, actually. It's worth watching.
I think they dragged it out a little bit, but it was very well done. There's that, and there's Inventing Anna. I love that series.
I've got to see that. Have you yet to see that? Yeah, I'm looking forward to that one. Right, on the note of inventing a woman called Anna, let's call it. So that was this week's
industry news.
Feeling overloaded with actionable information?
Yep.
Fed up receiving well-researched, factual security content?
Yes.
Ask your doctor if the Host Unknown podcast is right for you.
Always read the label, never double dose on episodes. Side effects may include nausea, eye rolling, and involuntary swearing in anger.
Right. Andy, let's have you close the show with this week's
Tweet of the Week.
And we always play that one twice.
Tweet of the Week.
And this week's Tweet of the Week is from Taggart. And he said, it's a dad joke, so I warn you, I'm going to sort of have a conversation with myself. I'm an offensive security professional. Oh, like a pen tester. No, I'm a SOC analyst, but also I'm a huge jerk.
Hang on. Oh, I thought I had a budum tish there, but I don't.
Alas. Yeah. Great one.
Very good, Andy. A suitable note to end the show on.
Tweet of the Week.
Gentlemen, thank you so much for your time this week. We've been running for many, many minutes. Jav, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And Andy, thank you.
Stay secure, my friends.
Stay secure.
Tweet of the week. You've been listening to the Host Unknown podcast. If you enjoyed what you heard, comment and subscribe. If you hated it, please leave your best insults on our Reddit channel.
Worst episode ever.
r/smashing security.
Kurt has a bumpy one. He had a bit of trouble with the buttons on this week's show, didn't he?
I'm always having trouble with the buttons.
His hands are shaking after using a power tool for like 3 hours.
That hole needed to be drilled.
Sure it did.